Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, it's the Capital Connection, and I'm Alan Chartok. Delighted to have in studio with us today New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. General, welcome.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be here.
So, boy, you're making big news. It's the question of the J.P. Morgan settlement. How did it come about that you were involved? I don't hear your name enough, because I know you had a great deal to do with putting this together.
Well, this is the settlement, which was a remarkable settlement in many ways, was only achieved because in 2011, I managed to convince, as a brand new attorney general, I managed to convince the federal government to form a working group into a joint investigation with my office. I refused to go along with the settlement that was then on the table that would have absolved the banks from pretty much all their wrongdoing, held out till they narrowed the releases. And then, you know, the White House got with the program. And in the January 2012 State of the Union address, the president announced the formation of our group that I co-chair. Unprecedented state federal working group, including the Justice Department, HUD, other federal agencies, and my office. And so I've been co-chairing that. And by pooling our resources and working together, we have the SEC in there, we've been able to share information and proceed much more quickly in investigations than we otherwise would have been. So the working group has been staffing up, and there are investigations going on all over the country, different U.S. attorneys' offices. Some other state attorneys general have some cases going on too, but not too many. And we were able to, we've had enough of us. I sued J.P. Morgan Chase first. The first action of the working group was my lawsuit last October. And then others were digging in on different pieces of the J.P. Morgan Chase empire, because they'd bought Bear Stearns, they'd bought Washington Mutual, and then J.P. Morgan itself had packaged and sold some mortgage-backed securities. So the purpose of our working group was we'd already settled issues related to abuses in the foreclosure practice, robo-signing and things like that in the national mortgage settlement. But we carved out of that all claims relating to conduct that took place before the crash, the conduct that actually created the housing bubble and crash that brought the American economy to its knees. So that was preserved, and our working group was assigned to look at that, exactly that conduct, because it was really the buildup of the housing bubble and the explosion of the mortgage-backed securities market, which were just pools of mortgages that were put together. And we understand what happened. It's not a secret. You can look at the process of issuing mortgages. And once you hit about 2004, you can see the quality of the loans declining. No documentation loans started to become more popular. Interest-only or negative amortization loans moved from a tiny bit of the market up to about 30% of the market.
Can you explain those a little bit so that everybody who's listening?
An interest-only loan means you're paying your interest every month, but your principal never goes down. So you're really not getting out of debt. And negative amortization is even worse. It's you're paying every month, but you are actually going further and further into debt. These are loans that are traditionally banks didn't like to make because it makes it more likely people will default. But they were making so much money off of the mortgage-backed securities, they pool them together and they'd slice them up into securities and they'd sell them to people all over the world, and they just didn't stay on their books long enough for them to worry about the defaults. So you can see the decline in the quality of mortgages. You can see more people really being snookered into taking out bigger mortgages than they should have. And because the housing prices were being artificially inflated, everyone had confidence that it was going to keep going. But the people who artificially inflated the housing prices, the people who were behind the mortgage-backed securities bubble, were these major financial institutions, and we are now looking at the conduct of all these institutions. The J.P. Morgan Chase settlement, which was the largest settlement in the history of the United States, is just the first of these settlements. And I commend J.P. Morgan Chase, actually, for having the vision to see that they would be better off to admit responsibility, pay some money, put this stuff behind them, and other banks will follow. But it was it's been a long haul doing this for the last 2 years, but it's a great result, and I look forward to more settlements with other major institutions.
Well, then I want to go down two different roads here. I don't know which we should do first, but somehow the state of New York, because of your efforts, gets $1 billion out of this money.
Yeah, we have one of the things that happened when I said I wasn't going to go along with the initial mortgage servicing settlement and wasn't going to sign a release that absolved the banks from liability for the conduct that led to the crash we started our own investigation in my office, and we were able to, you know, to get pretty far down the road. So we were in position to take advantage of it when the working group got together. We have worked very closely with our partners in the federal government and shared information, and my leadership in the working group and the fact that we did sue J.P. Morgan Chase led to us getting this. If it's a good deal for the country, it's a great deal for New York, because we have gotten $613 million in cash, and we will get well over $400 million in relief. So it's over $1 billion for New Yorkers. And this is going to enable us to help a lot of people stay in their homes. As a result of the first settlement, we were able to fund housing counselors and legal services providers all across the state. Because, Alan, a big part of the problem here was that when I took office, there were something like 345,000 New York families facing foreclosure. And I quickly learned that half of them had never had the opportunity to speak to a lawyer at any stage of the process.
Interesting. Because, you know, Eric, we have our board chairman here at WAMC is Ann Erickson, who is the head of the Empire Justice Center. And now I see why she's so excited about this, because she's going to get some of the money to do some of this work.
Well, we took money out of the first settlement and committed to $60 million over 3 years. And the timing was excellent, because the state had a budget crisis and money for legal services was getting cut very, very seriously. So we were able to sustain and revive and expand these programs. So now no New Yorker has to go negotiate with a bank over a loan modification without having a housing counselor or a lawyer. This has made a huge difference. The first servicing settlement, the feds projected that New York homeowners would get about $600 million in benefits, principal reductions, rate reductions on their mortgages. In the first year, we got $2 billion worth of relief. And I think a lot of that is attributable to the fact that Ann Erickson and her colleagues and the more than 90 organizations, which we have given money to provide these services, they're able to get better deals out of the banks, and they can help people figure out what you're eligible for. So everyone who's got problems with their mortgage should get to a legal services office, identify, go on our website and find where the HOP counseling offices are all over the state. Again, more than 90 organizations. We can expand that with the money from this settlement, but we're very determined to get every New Yorker any kind of relief that they're entitled to take advantage of all the opportunities from this settlement and future settlements for loan modifications. And we've also been able to fund, and we'll expand our funding for land banks, which are critically important. That land banks, there was legislation, this will not come as no surprise to you, that was passed in, I think, 2010 to set up land banks, but there was no funding provided for it. So the land banks, if they are funded, give the ability to local governments in cities like Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Suffolk County has a land bank, and other jurisdictions I hope will be adding land banks now that there's money, to buy abandoned houses. Because abandoned houses are not just a problem for the family that lost their home. Mm. They bring down the property values of the whole neighborhood. They can be havens for crime. And they undermine the tax base of the municipality. So now they're going to be able to buy them up with the money we use to fund the land banks, rehabilitate them and sell them. Or in the case of places that have a lot of distressed properties like Buffalo, they're just clearing them out and creating parkland or space for urban agriculture. And this is something that I think is going to be applied in Detroit as well. But it's a great model. We have the legislation for it. And now we can fund the land banks. And we're moving beyond just helping individual homeowners, but helping all of those who are damaged by the fact that they're in neighborhoods where people had bad mortgages, and try and broaden it out to help the housing market in the entire state.
Now, do you get to say where the $1 billion goes? You, Eric Schneiderman, and your office. I saw something very interesting. Andrew Cuomo announced he was going to, the same day you're coming out with this thing, he announced he was going to lower taxes in New York State by $1 billion. I couldn't help but wonder if he thought that your $1 billion that you just got was the $1 billion that he wanted to use for that.
No, the settlement has provisions requiring us to use this money to help the people who were hurt, actually, to use them for the purposes that I've outlined. This is, the idea is to get as many people as possible relief so that they can stay in their homes, and to help the communities that were devastated by the crash of the housing market. Up to 15% of the funds can go to the state's general fund, so that'll help some, but it's not the overwhelming portion of the relief is really going to go to, it helps the state in a lot of ways, though. It's going to go to homeowners, it's going to go to communities that were devastated. But if we get the housing market moving again, we get people out from underwater, then they can spend money on other things. It's a key to getting the economy really moving. And if the housing market starts to move and housing prices start to go up again, That'll help everybody, not just the people who really got the worst mortgages. That'll help everyone all across New York. And it's good for the economy. It's good for our tax base. So it's going to be a longer-term fix that we're seeking here, but it should improve the economy all over the state.
Now, some cynic said to me today, $13 billion, whatever it was, is just a cost of doing business for these guys. Is that true?
Well, it's a big cost of doing business. I mean, you know, the largest settlement
ever
before this one ever by a corporation was $4 billion plus. This is $9 billion cash plus another $4 billion relief. This is a serious settlement. And for New York State, where, frankly, we have a much lower number of folks with underwater loans than many states like Florida and California and Arizona, this is a tremendous deal for us. And I have to say, everyone has to keep in mind, this is one bank. This is not like the mortgage servicing settlement where five banks put up the money. This is one bank. And I've had talks with lawyers from other banks already. And we will continue to have the working group pursue its investigations. We can now take the lawyers and investigators that were working on J.P. Morgan Chase matters, reassign them to other institutions, and amp up our investigations. There very well may be more claims filed against other financial institutions. There certainly will be more settlement discussions. There are other big paydays to come.
Now, what if you find that some of the guys who you're settling with now civilly were really criminally responsible for what was going on?
This settlement provides no release for criminal liability for individuals or for institutions.
Do you suspect that there are some?
Well, our statute of limitations for criminal actions has expired. The federal government's has not. So there are U.S. attorney's offices around the country that are looking at this, and we preserved all those claims with this settlement.
Do you think it's time to go back to the legislature, Eric Schneiderman, and say that this proves that the statute of limitations on some of this stuff goes too fast?
We could try. I think that there would be significant opposition to that. And it's...
Why? Because the legislators are in on it?
No, I don't know that they're in on it, but I think that a lot of the companies that might be exposed would probably push back pretty hard. Look, I think it is a good idea. Prosecutors, we all favor longer statutes of limitations, but it's also harder to make cases further away from the moment of the crime. And in cases like this, where you have to prove individual specific intent to defraud, it's challenging. The criminal cases are more challenging than a lot of people realize. Do I think there was criminal misconduct in the creation of the housing bubble? Absolutely. Are the cases hard to make? Yes. But I came into office in January of 2011 and surveying the scene and realizing what was left for me to do, it seemed to me that the most important thing was to energize and get the federal government involved, because I have 15 lawyers who work on securities fraud cases. Justice Department has thousands of lawyers.
Sure.
So the strategy worked. We got the president engaged. He announced it in the State of the Union address. We've been staffing up the working group since then. My colleagues in U.S. Attorney's Offices, DOJ, HUD, the FHFA, which has the claims of Freddie and Fannie.
Yeah. Do you work with people like the U.S. Attorney?
Sure. I mean, have worked on matters together. Our offices work on matters together.
There's not good sort of a competition for credit, is there?
Well, I think there's enough for everybody. I prefer collaboration. And there's, Alan, if you're in the crime and corruption business, you never want for targets. So there's enough for everyone. If someone else is doing a case, that's fine by me. I'll go do something else. But I think we all benefit when prosecutors cooperate and collaborate. And our working group is a great example of that. I mean, we had a series of conferences held down at the SEC headquarters. We brought people in from all over the country. We've shared information. We've shared ideas. We've shared legal theories. We developed this legal theory of attacking the banks for the failures of their due diligence process, which is the process by which they guarantee and then represent to investors that they've checked all of these mortgages and their solid loans and they wouldn't be putting a bad loan in. And that process just broke down. And all of the various claims that were either brought or were investigations were underway against J.P. Morgan and its affiliates essentially related to that same theory. So collaborating, we're able to do so much more. And the guys at the Justice Department and U.S. Attorney's offices all around the country have been terrific, and more to come.
I was talking to somebody else today who said, I want to know who the next governor after Andrew Cuomo is going to be. And I said, well, in New York State, it does seem that the attorney generals are moving up to be governor. And I wonder whether you would like to react to that question.
I'm looking forward to, and I hope to run for re-election next year. And I want to keep this job as long as the people of the state of New York will let me. It's the best job I've ever had. I get to use everything I learned in 16 years of private practice of law and everything I learned being in New York State Legislature. And it's just incredibly challenging and incredibly energizing every day. So I'm going to keep doing this for a while, and we'll see what happens down the road.
Okay, so let's go to the other thing that has been on everybody's lips since you got here, and that is you and Andrew Cuomo decided it was time for a Moreland Act commission, and the Moreland Act guys were supposed to go out, trace the money, and find out what the potential for corruption or the actuality of corruption is going. You made sure that they could have access to the legislature by giving them a portfolio. So how is that going?
They seem to be doing their job. The governor wrote an executive order, and the executive order provides them with specific mandates to investigate certain things. And the mandate of the Moreland Commission is to look for weaknesses in existing laws and suggest improvements. If they find criminal misconduct, they have to refer it to my office or to a district attorney. They're not really designed to prosecute people. And the governor set forth in the executive order some very specific things that they're supposed to be looking at. As far as I know, they are. My role was just to deputize them. So they, in addition to having powers under the Moreland Act, have the powers of my office.
Yeah, it's like Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp, when he was the town marshal, was also U.S. Marshal.
Right, U.S. Marshal, town marshal. There. So their jurisdiction is very broad, and I'm not directly involved with the day-to-day, and the commissioners can speak for themselves. It appears to me they're doing their job, and I hope they do, and I hope they come up with some good suggestions.
Well, I don't want to be, as my mother would put it, fresh. However, the idea was that you know, all of a sudden we were hearing that the governor's people were interfering with who was getting subpoenas because it was politically inconvenient. What do you know about that?
Yeah, it seems to me that the subpoenas are going out. Actually, the only contact I really have is I get a weekly report, which the statute requires, and they essentially just tell me what subpoenas have gone out. This commission is busy. This is a very strong group of commissioners.
They are.
This is a group of great prosecutors.
So it was somewhat disturbing to hear this other stuff.
Some great former prosecutors. I think they are doing their job. They're issuing a report in a few weeks. I look forward to getting it, and I think that's going to tell everyone what they're doing, and we should let the commissioners have their chance.
What do you think about the legislature?
I believe in separation of powers. I like the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. I know a lot of people in the legislature. Most of them are very good people who are trying to serve their constituents, as in any sector that I've encountered. There are some bad actors, but the overwhelming majority of people in the state legislature are good public servants who really do want to help the communities they represent.
It's my job to get you into trouble, so I'll try. There's this cutoff group under Jeff Klein that has made alliances with the Republicans, and you know a lot about the legislature, and it means that there are more Democrats in New York, but that somehow the Republicans are still in control of the Senate. There are even more Democratic senators. What do you make of that?
It's the fractured politics of the New York State Senate. I mean, for the last number of years, it's been very turbulent there. I mean, the assembly is at least solid. It's got an overwhelming Democratic majority, and that's not going to change anytime soon. And the Senate has just been turbulent, and I think it will be turbulent for some years to come.
Because?
Because the margins are so thin. Whichever party's in power has a very thin edge. And there are significant disagreements within both of the parties. So it's hard, you know, getting a majority for every vote is challenging. When I got into the Senate, the Republicans had, I think, a 6 or 7 seat edge on the Democrats. And that gave them a little more room to maneuver. When it gets down to just 1 or 2 or 3 seats, it's challenging. And I think you can look at something like the vote on the SAFE Act, where the downstate Republican senators,
it's the Gun Act, yeah,
in favor of the gun reform legislation, and the upstate guys adamantly voted no. The Senate is just more turbulent right now, and I think it's going to be turbulent for a few more years.
When Andrew Cuomo was the Attorney General, I know, I've spoken to him about it, he did investigations of people in the legislature. Are you doing that too?
Well, one of the things we did, we've expanded our public integrity and public corruption work significantly. One of the things we did was enter into an unprecedented executive order with the state controller, Tom DiNapoli, because his auditors were looking at some expenditures of funds in the same situations we were looking at public corruption matters. So by working together, we brought this case against Shirley Huntley, who is now doing time in prison. We brought a series of indictments around the state, gotten some town supervisors, brought a case against a group of people up in Monroe County for rigging contracts and things like that. So we are moving out into that space. We also took the step of putting public integrity officers in each of our regional offices, because as I traveled around the state, I realized that whether they were right or wrong, a lot of people were afraid to bring things to a local district attorney because they perceived that they were interconnected with the power structure and they might be reporting on people that were close to or friendly with the district attorney. So we set this up, and we've had great results in getting tips. In fact, in one case, in one city, I introduced the public integrity officer and made the announcement. And 4 or 5 hours later, I got back to my hotel. There was a huge file of documents waiting for me with my name scribbled on it that some whistleblower had just been waiting for an opportunity to levy these accusations of public corruption. And I think it's good for them to have somebody who's independent of the local political structure to report it to. We've made a lot of moves in that area. Look, I think that there are more prosecutors putting more energy into dealing with matters of public corruption than I've ever seen. And I don't think it's that people are more corrupt than they were 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. I just think that prosecutors are no longer willing to turn a blind eye. And my office and Preet Bharara's office and others take this very seriously. And I think that it's important to restore public confidence in the integrity of our state government. And I tell my friends in the legislature, you know, turning a blind eye to someone engaged in misconduct is not helping you. It's hurting you. And I think that this is all about restoring public confidence. And that was shot. Believe me, when I was campaigning around the state in 2010, people thought the government in Albany was just a catastrophe. They just sort of dismissed it as a solution to their problems. I am a Democrat. I'm a believer in government as a force for good. But that to me means I have to be the harshest critic of waste, fraud, and corruption in the government. The conservatives kind of like it when the government's screwing up. In fact, in Washington, they succeed in creating ways to make the government screw up. But I think it's in our interest as a state to make sure that people have confidence in the government. And I think that those of us who want to tell the taxpayers that we can do good things have to be the toughest critics of waste, fraud, and corruption.
Well, we only have 2 minutes, but I first of all, a compliment. I love the fact that you're working hand in glove with Tom DiNapoli. I think that's terrific. He has the numbers. You know, you have the law. Andrew Cuomo, Elliot Spitzer, each of them claim to be a sheriff of something. And Eric Schneiderman is going to be the sheriff of?
You know, I was a deputy sheriff before I went to law school, and I'm not sure I ever thought about moving up to being sheriff. But look, I'm the sheriff of for the whole state. I'm the sheriff of Wall Street, of Main Street, and we are trying to do things in our office. And actually, with this housing work, we are succeeding in helping main streets and side streets all over the state. So I'm happy to be the sheriff for the state of New York.
And one last thing, Eric Schneiderman, and that is you're doing a terrific job, but if the tree falls in the woods and nobody knows it, then what happens? How does a guy like you get to the public so that they know about the job you're doing?
Well, I have to get on the Alan Chartok show more often, I think. And we had our nose to the grindstone the first couple of years to make sure we're getting everything right. And I want to get my strong preference is to make sure you got everything right before you go out and start crowing about it. And in the last year or so, we've been out publicly more talking about things, and more things, frankly, are coming to fruition. So it took me a couple of years to get this deal out of J.P. Morgan Chase. Spectacular deal for the people of the state of New York. I'm out talking about it, and there'll be more big deals to talk about in the year ahead.
Well, Eric Schneiderman, it's a great honor and a pleasure to have the Attorney General of the State of New York with us. We are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Thanks, Eric, for joining us. And it is a real pleasure. And good luck on everything you're doing.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.